Joint Committee on Ways and Means for Friday, June 15th. Welcome, colleagues. Welcome, guests. Budget bills. House Bill 5012, Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development. Senator Devlin, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Co-chair. House Bill 5012 is the bill for the operations budget of the Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development. The department's capital construction budget is contained in another budget bill. In House Bill 5012, the state supports the operations of Oregon's 17 community colleges, provides these colleges with state-level leadership and technical assistance, funds the Oregon Youth Conservation Corps, allocates federal and other funds to support workforce adult basic education and professional technical programs. The bill appropriates $510.9 million, a general fund to support Oregon's community colleges, including $500 million of direct support through the Community College Support Fund. This level of Community College Support Fund represents an increase of more than $71 million, or 16.6%, over the current binding level. In addition, the bill provides $2.2 million of general fund to increase capacity in community college health care training programs, $438,000 for statewide expansion of the Oregon Financial Aid Exchange Program, and $2.6 million to improve centralized services and support data systems integration at the department. The Education Subcommittee reviewed the agency's performance measures and adjusted performance measures targets to reflect the funding level in this bill. The Subcommittee noted that the funding level in this bill should allow community colleges to expand associate degree program completions by 18% over the next 3 years and to expand the number of professional technical degrees and certificates awarded by 19% over the same period. Colleagues, your Education Subcommittee recommends that House Bill 5012 be amended by the -2 amendments and reported out do pass as amended.
Thank you, Senator. Any discussion? Representative Galizia.
Yeah, Madam Chair, I declare a potential conflict of interest. I'm employed by one of the community colleges.
Thank you. Anybody else? Senator Nelson.
Yes, thank you. I was just during the course of this, I know the committee really worked this bill hard and really did a lot of good things. At one point, I'd heard that there was an escalator clause. Is that part of this bill, or is that not considered?
Senator Devlin.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair, to Senator Nelson's question. There was a discussion in the committee of an escalator clause. There was a general belief that it would be good to potentially provide them greater sources if they were available, but it was generally felt that those decisions should be left to future special sessions or sessions of the legislature.
Thank you. So, Senator, it's not there. Anybody else? Any objections? Seeing none? Motion carries. House Bill 5026, Office of the Governor. Representative Jensen, please.
Oh, thank you, Madam Co-Chair. House Bill 5026, a budget bill for the Office of the Governor. Subcommittee adjusted the budget of the Office of the Governor's Office to restore funding for the Governor's Association national and regional dues and information technology support. These had been cut during the recession and not restored in the 05-07 budget. The subcommittee also approved the funding for a full-time staff in Washington, D.C., additional travel costs for airfare within the state, and to continue the Office of Rural Policy for 9 months. The office has not demonstrated any achievements or outcomes, yet testimony provided advocated continuing the office. The subcommittee provided funding so that the office could continue and return to the assembly in 2008 with a business plan and performance measures with clearly understood outcomes for evaluation and deliberation as to continued funding. The subcommittee also worked with the Office of the Governor to get a budgetary handle on the staffing in the office. The past practice of the governor's has been to add staff are off the budget, normally by having various state agencies double fill and pay for positions. We have made adjustments that added staff and funding to the governor's office to be funded in large measure by revenue transfers from other agencies. We have reduced other state agency budgets to reflect their reduced expenditures, as the staff will now be paid for in the governor's office. The end result is a budget of $11.3 million general fund, $2.1 million lottery fund, and $2.4 million other fund, and 64 positions, equaling 62.56 full-time equivalents. Subcommittee also reviewed the agency's performance measures. We deleted one and approved six measures, included in the budget reported, noting the office will continue to work on data and targets and report back to the Assembly. General Government Subcommittee recommends House Bill 5026 be amended and reported out. Do pass as amended.
Thank you, Representative. Any discussion? I'll just thank the work of the committee and the cooperation we had from the governor's office. I think this budget reflects more transparency in the way we budget, and I think that's a good thing for people to be able to see what's really going on. Any objections? Motion carries. House Bill 5033, Department of Land Conservation and Development. Senator Devlin.
There was another one here, Madam Co-Chair. Just hadn't found it.
Okay.
House Bill 5033 is the budget bill for the Department of Land Conservation and Development. This agency is responsible for overseeing Oregon's statewide land use planning program. It is also the lead agency for coordinating the state's response to ballot measure 37, which was passed by voters in November 2004. The Subcommittee on Natural Resources approved a total budget of $23.1 million and 73.71 full-time equivalent positions. This funding level is an increase of 11% over the 2005-2007 legislatively approved budget. The subcommittee approved $750,000 general funds for a review of the state's 30-year-old land use planning system and an additional $500,000 general funds for planning issues related to service delivery in unincorporated urbanized areas. In addition, the subcommittee added $4.5 million general fund in 16 positions to provide resources to the agency to process Measure 37 claims for compensation. The subcommittee reduced the landowner education program by $90,000 to reflect efficiency in initiatives in the agency budget. The subcommittee approved performance measures as presented to the agency and added the best practices measures for boards and commissions. The Subcommittee on Natural Resources recommends House Bill 5033 be amended and reported out. Do pass as amended.
Thank you, Senator. Discussion? Representative Burr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Despite my policy disagreements with this agency, it is a well-run agency, considering the pressure that it's been under, and it has an excellent director in Lane Shetterly. This bill would propose an additional $1.5 million for Measure 37 claims, and that's for 2008, depending on perhaps which way the ballot measure is voted on this fall. It also includes the $4 million they've received for 16 additional FTEs to handle Measure 37 claims for the remainder of this year. So, one of the more contentious discussions in committee was on the Big Wood Committee, which originally wanted 1.25, I believe, in funding to continue the Big Look, which will report to this body in the next legislative session. That was cut to $750,000 in this budget. I have not had any direct conversations as to whether they feel that's adequate or not, but I suspect it is adequate. So I will be voting yes for this budget.
Further discussion? Any objections? Senator Whitson. Seeing no others, motion carries. Thanks. House Bill 5037, Military Department. Representative Hannah, please.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. House Bill 5037 is the budget bill for the Oregon Military Department. The Military Department is responsible for the administration of the Oregon Army and Air National Guards and Oregon State Defense Force. The Public Safety Subcommittee approved a total budget of $279.6 million for the department. The budget includes $23.2 million general fund, $82.9 million other funds, and $173.5 million federal funds, and 472.56 full-time equivalent employees. The approved budget includes the following: the transfer of the Office of Emergency Management from the Oregon State Police to the Oregon Military Department, continued support of the Soldier Reintegration Program, hunting and angling license reimbursement for veterans, reauthorization of the state's 911 system, enhancements to emergency management staff, continued support for the Oregon Youth Challenge Program, capital improvement for deferred maintenance projects, debt service supporting 7 major capital construction projects, enhanced funding for the operation and maintenance of armories, airfields, and other installation, and establishment of new positions, elimination of long-term vacant positions, and reclassifies of other positions. The department also receives federal support outside the state budget of approximately $425 million, and which is used to fund federal employees, 2,132 full-time equivalent employees. These are guard member salaries and wages and equipment. The budget report for this measure includes 3 budget notes instructing the department to report on its integration of the Office of Emergency Management, requesting that future debt service be partially funded with armory rental revenue, and a request that the department use capital construction account proceeds from the sale of its real assets to reduce debt service. The subcommittee also approved performance measures for the department, but instructed the department to work with the legislative fiscal office during the interim to further evaluate and refine the department's measures. The Public Safety Subcommittee recommends House Bill 5037 be amended and reported out do pass as amended.
Thank you, Representative. Any discussion? Representative Shields?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to thank the entire committee for rolling up their sleeves, particularly in the last month of the session, to make sure that additional aspects of the Youth Challenge Program were funded, as well as fully funding not just the reintegration program for our returning vets, but also the support services that work to make the reintegration program possible. And particularly wanted to thank my colleagues on the Senate side, Senator Westland, Senator Winters, and Senator Nelson for pushing hard to make that possible.
Thank you, Representative. Further discussion? Any objections? Motion carries. House Bill 5047, Department of Transportation. Senator Verger, please.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. House Bill 5047 is the budget for the Department of Transportation. The agency develops and manages the statewide transportation system, licenses and regulates drivers and vehicles, and supports the traffic safety, public transit, and multimodal planning programs. The budget for the department totals $3.3 billion and $4,527.24 FTE. This is an increase of $524.16 million and a decrease of 41.13 FTE from the 0507 legislatively approved budget. General fund support is decreased by 47.8% with passage of House Bill 2982, dedicating $4.3 million for operation of one of the 2 Cascade trains from Eugene to Portland from fees collected for customized vehicle registration plates. The balance is subsidized with general fund and some federal transportation funds for operation of the thruway bus routes. The increases in other funds and federal funds from the 0507 budget levels support highway construction projects, including $990 million supported by highway user bonds, $784 million from federal revenues, and $33 million from other highway funds for highway construction projects. The budget supports $25 million of the $100 million in lottery-backed revenue bonds and $4.9 million lottery funds for related debt service costs to continue an initiative for Connect Oregon transportation projects approved by the legislature for the 2005-07 biennium. The budget also includes resources to respond to mandates outlined by Senate Bill 640, 2005, to utilize biometrics in the issuance of driver license, permits, and identification cards, make significant investments in maintaining and improving the agency's aging infrastructure, and outreach efforts in providing opportunities to disadvantaged minority, women, and emerging small businesses. The budget continues support for senior and disabled transit operations and equipment. The budget for the Board of Maritime Pilots was also reviewed and approved. Budget notes addressing performance measures, construction project cost underruns, airspace leases, the multimodal transportation study, and mentor protege programs were adopted. The subcommittee approved performance measures with direction to rework 6 measures and create 3 new measures. I move House Bill 5047 be amended and reported out due pass as amended.
Thank you, Senator. Any discussion? Any objections? Seeing none, motion carries. House Bill 5048, the Department of Transportation Fee Bill. Excuse me, am I reading this right, Senator Whitfield?
Thank you.
Good morning, Senator.
Good morning, good Madam Co-Chair. I do appreciate your concern with my sanity. This bill does authorize fees for public records requested for the Department of Transportation. The Department increased public records request rates through the administrative rule process for photocopies from 20 cents per page to 25 cents per page. Labor costs from $15 per hour to $25 per hour, and fax transmission from actual cost to $5 for the first page and $1 for each additional page. As in this bill, state law requires that the fee increases adopted administratively would be rescinded on July 1, 2007, or upon signing die. In addition, the department requested new fees for email transmission at $5 per mailing and computer disk at $5 per disk. The subcommittee discussed rationale for the additional fees and determined that the fee for email transmission is not appropriate, recommending removal of the fee from the bill. The subcommittee recommends House Bill 5048 be amended and reported out due pass as amended. Thank you, Madam Co-Chair.
Thank you, Senator. Any discussion? Any objections? Seeing none? Oh, I'm sorry. Representative Morgan. Motion carries. Senate Bill 5507, Criminal Justice Commission. Representative Nathanson, please.
Madam Co-Chair. Senate Bill 5507 is the budget bill for the Criminal Justice Commission. This 9-member commission's primary purpose is to develop and maintain a statewide criminal justice policy and comprehensive long-range plan for a coordinated criminal justice system. In addition, the commission administers a grant program for drug courts. The Public Safety Committee approved a budget for this agency of $8.5 million total funds and $7.4 million general fund. The budget increases the analytical capacity of the commission staff by making a research analyst position full-time. The budget also recognizes the transfer of the law enforcement contacts function of the commission to Portland State University and reduced funding by $135,000 general fund. Funding of over $5 million is included for the new and expanding drug court program established by the 2005 legislature as part of the methamphetamine package. Recognizing that the Commission is not necessarily an agency suited to maintain and administer an ongoing program, the Subcommittee recommends a budget note instructing the Judicial Department, the Commission, and the Department of Human Services to develop a long-term plan for the drug courts funded through this grant program. A combination of general fund and federal resources are included in the budget to continue grants made for additional drug courts funded with one-time federal funds during 0507. Existing undesignated federal grant funds were identified for these drug courts, and the budget assumes the governor will direct these funds for this purpose. Sufficient general fund resources are included in the budget to increase overall drug court funding overall by $500,000 over the essential budget level. The Public Safety Committee recommends Senate Bill 5507 be amended and reported out due pass as amended.
Thank you, Representative. Any discussion? Any objections? Seeing none, motion carries. Let's move on to other bills reported out of subcommittee. House Bill 2105, relating to the Department of State Lands. Senator Devlin, please.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. House Bill 2105 creates a general fund permit for removal and fill activities, increases existing fees for removal and fill permits, and allows for annual fee increases based on the Consumer Price Index beginning January 1, 2009. The bill was referred by the House Committee on Energy and Environment. The bill increases removal fill fees to bring the program's shared funding ratio closer to the ratio established when the program was created in 1967. At that time, the shared funding ratio was 65% fee funding and 35% common school fund. Fees were last increased in 1989, which established at that time a 50-50 funding ratio. For the 2006 fiscal year, fees covered just over 9% of the costs of the removal fill program. The revised fee schedule increases fees by approximately 65% and generated an estimated $581,864 in additional other fund fee revenue. Increased fee revenues combined with grants and interagency agreements are expected to provide 35% of the current program funding, while common school fund would still continue to cover 65%. The Natural Resource Subcommittee recommends House Bill 2105 be reported out to pass. 2105A.
Thank you, Senator. Any discussion? Representative Gord.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The Department of State Lands is currently in a policy where they will go into different areas in the state of Oregon on the remove and fill program. When it comes to your neck of the woods, it will be controversial. They seem to have been in my area forever. In essence, and as a quick example to the committee, homeowners that live along any kind of water will go out into the water and take a rock off the bottom of a lake or river and use it to prevent erosion along the banks of that water, have to pay a remove and fill license fee to do that. Now we're going to increase the fee on the individual property owner to take rocks out of the water and put them up against the bank. It's wonderful trying to defend this state agency to your constituents. So I'll be voting no, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative. Any further discussion? Objections? Representative Girard, Representative Hanna, Representative Morgan, Senator Whitsitt, Senator Verger, and Senator Winters. Motion carries. House Bill 2106, relating to fees for agency review of wetland delineation reports. Representative Nathanson, please.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair.
Surprise.
House Bill 2106 establishes a wetland delineation report review fee, sets a report review time frame, and allows for annual fee increases based on the Consumer Price Index beginning January 1, 2009. The bill was referred by the House Committee on Energy and the Environment for consideration of the fiscal impacts on the Department of State Lands budget. The Department of State Lands reviews approximately 430 delineation reports annually for verification of wetland boundaries for land development or other projects at no cost to the applicant. The department currently manages workload by giving priority to reports submitted with a removal fill application. As a result, reports submitted in advance of request for a removal fill application typically do not receive a timely review. The bill establishes a $350 fee for wetland delineation report review and a $100 fee for review of a report revised to replace a rejected report. The fees are expected to generate $267,890 in other fund revenue during the 07-09 biennium. Increased revenue would enable the department to hire two additional wetland specialists so the department can meet the review timeline of 120 days specified in the bill and provide better overall customer service. The amendment establishes an operative date of January 1, 2008 and adds $255,667 additional expenditure limitation and two positions to enable the department to implement the bill. The Natural Resource Subcommittee recommends House Bill 2106 be reported out due pass as amended.
Thank you, Representative. Any discussion? Any objections? Senator Whitsitt? Representative Garrard, Representative Hanna, Representative Morgan. Motion carried. House Bill 2199, relating to bonds issued under Article 11F of the Oregon Constitution. Representative Morgan, please.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. House Bill 2199 authorizes the use of financial agreements relating to the sale of Article X1F1 bonds. Article X1F1 bonds are a type of state general obligation bond that's used to finance construction projects in the Oregon University system that are self-supporting. These types of projects include housing and dining facilities, athletic facilities, parking structures, and student centers. Campuses finance the debt service on these bonds with fees charged for using the facilities or with student building fee revenues. Under current law, Article X1F1 bonds are issued on a fixed rate basis. House Bill 2199 will allow the state to issue Article X1F1 bonds on a variable rate basis. This in turn will reduce the cost of debt finance that historically, the interest rate on variable rate bonds has been approximately 1% lower than the interest rate on comparable fixed rate bonds. Issuing variable rate bonds is projected to reduce OUS's debt service costs by $1.35 million per year. House Bill 2199 is supported by the state treasury and offers the state an opportunity to realize significant cost savings. Your education subcommittee recommends passage of House Bill 2199A.
Thank you, Representative. Any discussion? Any objections? Seeing none, motion carries. We're not done, folks. Flip over your agendas. Halfway home, though. House Bill 2370, relating to Oregon security. Representative Hanna, please.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. House Bill 2370 transfers the Office of Emergency Management from the Oregon State Police to the Oregon Military Department. This includes the Office of Emergency Management's six major program areas: Oregon Emergency Response System, Statewide 911 System, Emergency and Hazard Mitigation Planning Grant Administration, Chemical Stockpile Emergency Preparedness Program, Search and Rescue Program, and Domestic Preparedness. The Adjutant General, with the approval of the Governor, appoints the Director of the Office of Emergency Management. The measure also revises and updates the definition of emergency and natural or human-caused circumstances. The measure also reassigns responsibility for the State Interoperability Executive Council from the Office of Emergency Management to Oregon State Police. Lastly, the measure prohibits a unit of government from seizing a firearm from an individual who lawfully possesses the firearm during a declared state of emergency. The fiscal impact of the measure is $131.9 million. The The budget is comprised of $2 million general fund, $28.8 million other funds, $4.6 million other funds non-limited, $51.3 million federal funds, and $45.2 million federal funds non-limited. The budget includes 38 positions. The cost of the measure is reflected in both the military department and the Oregon State Police budgets. The Public Safety Subcommittee recommends House Bill 2370 be amended and reported out due pass as amended.
Thank you, Representative. Any discussion? Senator Berger, please.
Thank you very much, Madam Co-Chair. As Chair of the Emergency Preparedness Committee, this represents months and months of work in trying to get Oregon prepared. This was very necessary. I just want to thank the committee for making these changes and adjustments in the budget that make this necessary. Thank you, Madam Co-Chair.
Thank you, Senator. Any further discussion? Any objections? Seeing none, the motion carries. House Bill 2801, relating to stem cell research. Representative Galizio, please.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. House Bill 2801 creates the Human Stem Cell Research Committee in the Department of Human Services. The bill requires committee membership to include biomedical research scientists, medical ethicists, legal specialists on stem cell research, and members of the general public. This committee would be charged with developing guidelines for human stem cell research in Oregon and with developing recommendations relating to issues of informed consent in human stem cell research before the end of the 2009 legislative session. The bill also authorizes the committee to administer a grant program to award monies for human stem cell research projects in Oregon and to solicit donations from public and private sources to fund and support these grants. This grant program, however, is delayed until the start of the 09-11 biennium. Your education subcommittee added $159,366 general fund to finance the committee's operations this biennium as it completes these important reports. No general fund is appropriated to support stem cell research projects, however, and the committee would not be authorized to award any grants of private funds prior to July 1, 2009. Stem cell research holds great promise to develop new treatments and cures for diseases and new treatments for debilitating injuries. Oregon can be and should be a contributor to these efforts. This bill would support stem cell research in Oregon and the institutions conducting that research by clarifying research guidelines, creating a grant mechanism to assist in identifying and funding worthwhile projects. And the bill also supports the efforts of Oregonians to develop state-based guidelines and decide how we would like stem cell research conducted in our state. Your Education Subcommittee recommends that House Bill 2801A be amended by the A9 amendments and reported out due pass as amended.
Thank you, Representative. Any discussion? Representative Morgan.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. We had a somewhat lengthy discussion in the subcommittee around this bill, and it became apparent very early that an issue here was the fetal stem cell research. And I think that the bill is very close to being something that can gain bipartisan support with one pretty simple amendment to it, but the committee declined to get into that kind of a discussion. I think that this is offensive to the ethics and the morality of a great many Oregonians. It's a divisive issue, and I was a no vote on it in the subcommittee, and I'll be a no vote on it today.
Thank you, Representative. Any other discussion? Senator Bates.
Very quickly, Madam Chair. Stem cell research medically is probably the brave new world we're going to enter into very quickly in the next 5, 10, or 15 years. It's going to resolve a lot of the chronic diseases we deal with and maybe even some of the acute diseases and injuries we deal with. There are ethical questions involved in that, and I believe from my reading this bill, maybe I'm not as clear on it as Representative Morgan is, that we do need to have a discussion of those ethics, not just from the source of the stem cells. I think we're going to find sources for stem cells that are non fetal. And we can probably resolve that issue scientifically in the next 4 or 5 years. But how those stem cells are then used, who owns those clone lines, and the kind of information we get from them is going to be very important. I think an ethical discussion of that's important too. This is a very minimal effort for the state of Oregon. Other countries and other states are doing much, much more in stem cell research, and we're really lagging behind. I think this is a good step forward, and I particularly like the fact that we're going to have an ethical discussion about this through this bill. Thank you.
Senator. Any further discussion?
Representative Galizia.
Thank you. So as the chief co-sponsor of this bill, I would say a couple things. Number one, I'm a little actually disappointed where we wound up. This is a very, very conservative bill. As Senator Bates said, several states, including our neighbors to the south, which passed a ballot measure to issue bonds in the amount of $3 billion. Other states, Connecticut, Illinois, Maryland. We have OHSU, which is already has a stem cell research center. What's offensive to many is the fact that through ideological beliefs at the federal government, they're halting research which for regenerative medicine, which has great promise. Adult stem cells have been studied since the 50s, so we have a lot of information on that, but embryonic stem cells were first isolated in humans in 1998. So for us to try to prevent research, I think, is really problematic. This is a very conservative step. It doesn't grant any monies. It just says, let's set up a committee to take a look at these ethical issues and scientific issues and see if Oregon is poised to join this. So I would urge your aye vote on this.
Thank you. Any further discussion? Any objections? Representative Garrard, Representative Jensen, Representative Hanna, Representative Morgan, Senator Whitsitt, Senator Winters. Motion carries. House Bill 2901, relating to public funds. Representative Jensen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. House Bill 2901 changes the collateralization procedures and requirements for deposits of public funds. The bill came from the House and was referred directly to Ways and Means in the Senate because of the fiscal impact. There was no opposition to the bill offered in the subcommittee. The General Government Subcommittee amended the bill to provide expenditure limitation for staff necessary to the Treasurer's Office to implement the bill. The General Government Subcommittee recommends House Bill 2901 be amended and reported out be passed as amended.
Thank you, Representative. Any discussion? Any objections? Seeing none, motion carries. We have a bit of a dropped ball on the next bill, so the subcommittee is going to get a chance to work on that again. We will go to House Bill 3166 relating to anatomical gifts. Representative Shields, please.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. House Bill 3166 instructs the Oregon Department of Transportation to provide information about the state policy and benefits of anatomical gifts to individuals who apply for a driver's license or identification card. In addition, the bill requires an applicant to affirm that they do not want to be an anatomical donor. The bill also requires the Office of Health Policy and Research to provide a report on the efficacy of the program. The results are due to the Legislative Assembly no later than January 31st, 2011. House Bill 3166 will have a $199,312 general fund impact in the 2007-09 session and $166,240 in 2009-11. The bill will require ODOT to do some level of reprogramming of the Division of Motor Vehicle System. The appropriation for this bill will be done in the Emergency Fund Bill, Senate Bill 5509, at the end of session. The Transportation and Economic Development Committee recommends House Bill 3166 be amended and reported out due pass as amended.
Thank you, Representative. Discussion? Senator Bates?
There are people out there dying right now for lack of anatomical donations. And when some people may feel uncomfortable about this, I think it's the right move to go forward with the bill.
Thank you. Any further discussion? Representative Hanna.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. This bill came to us yesterday in committee. I think it's probably appropriate for this body to know that we heard from the executive director from Donate Life Northwest, the executive director from the Pacific Northwest Transplant Bank, and from the director of the Northwest Eye Bank, all of whom are opposed to this bill. Further, I think just for the public's benefit, it's important to note, regardless of the way this is stated, today you make a choice to become a donor when you sign up for your driver's license. Under this bill, you would be saying, without disagreement, everyone would be a donor. And so there's some moral issue there around, does everybody want to have to say no to the donor, or is it better to agree to be and sign up for that process? We had conversation around those who, on the committee yesterday, pulled out their driver's license, including myself, who are currently donors. And the ability to go on to the website of Donate Life Northwest and select that part of being a donor that you choose to be. You want it to be all your organs, your tissue, your eyes. And so you're able to go through and make that choice on the website with a secure password and be clear about what part of donation you want to participate in. There's also the issue of our DMV employees trained to participate and give great counsel to this issue. And I think their answer was, no, they're really not trained to do that, and it's just not the right place to go. And given that the folks who handle this at the highest level are against the idea, I think this is a step in the wrong direction, and that we did not hear any compelling evidence that moving towards the process suggested in this bill improves the number of people who participate in the donor program. I'll be a no vote.
Senator Burgess. Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I'm going to be a yes on the bill. However, there are parts of it that in the discussion yesterday I found disturbing, but that's true of many bills that we have to vote on. There's enough good in a bill, and then there are those things that you really have concerns about. And so I am willing for this to go to the floor. I would really hope, however, that those who really feel that this the purpose of this is to increase donors, which I think is such a good motivation for a bill, I would hope that the part that bothers me the most is that if I don't do anything, if I don't sign up, then I'm considered the opt-out. And so I would hope that somehow that part of that bill could some way be resolved. So thank you, Madam Co-Chair.
That's a very good point. Thank you, Senator. Representative Shields.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I appreciate the comments of my colleague from Roseburg. I guess what got me to yes on this was a couple of things. One, we looked at it in the Budget Committee, the Ways and Means Committee, but I felt that the work of the Policy Committee had much more testimony, did a more thorough vetting of the bill, and it passed out of the Policy Committee unanimously with the support of Representative Maurer, Olson and Gilliam, very broad bipartisan support. And Representative Maurer is on the front lines of healthcare every day, and that helped me get to yes. And I think with the concerns about the decision-making process, I also felt that there were 3 points where the person could become aware of and make a decision. One is orally, when they're asked if they want to be involved in it. Two, they would see written confirmation. And three, on the back of their license, it would say anatomical donor. And I felt those three pieces were enough to balance the act to the side of trying to save lives. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Nathanson.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Being respectful of the committee's time, I would just like to say that I echo the sentiments of Senator Berger. Thank you.
Thank you.
Senator Winters. Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I will be a no vote, and I will be a no. I am a donor. You know, I volunteered to become a donor, and I think to me that is the crux of the question of the issue, and that is not to take away the person's choice to make that choice, and not everyone reads or understands the fine prints of documents that are out there. And I have some real questions about us passing a policy
to where if we're having this amount of discussion about it and we have this amount of concern, that we would go forward and say yes when the general public thinks that they're getting a driver's license and don't know later that they've also signed up to donate their organs whether they wanted to or not. So I would be a no vote. Senator Bates?
Just to go back to what I spoke to a moment ago, and the other issue of what the DMV does with this, when you ask for consent for something, you're asking essentially, no matter what the issue is, for a yes or no from the patient. And you can phrase it different ways, but you're asking the same thing. The DMV right now asks for a yes or no on temporal donations. I got my new license a week ago, and I was asked the question, and I'm a donor. But if they said to me, you wish not to be a donor, it would not change my position. I think it would change anyone's position. They're still asking the same question. This makes it simpler. When you're out in the field and you've got a patient before you who is unfortunately been injured in a way that they can't speak to you but is still have viable organs, you have to make some very fast decisions sometimes. And we know there are people in this country who are dying for lack of an organ transplant. I think this bill allows us to move a little bit further along in that direction. The organ banks, I think, are concerned because they think there may be a backlash against them for this. But I think if you ask them, do you really agree with the policy, will this make more organs available to you, you would get a different answer. I think they're just scared of the backlash that might occur from the public from this. And I think that once you get this in place, the public accepts it after a time, those issues will go away as you see lives saved and lives improved by organ transplants. And I just think it's something that's a good bill that can move us forward and can really help people and save lives. And that's why maybe a yes.
Thank you. Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm a donor as well, and in the interest of brevity, I share the concerns of Senator Verger and Representative Hanna. We heard very provocative testimony yesterday, and I think some of us are still studying the implications of the bill. I'm willing to move it forward today. I don't know to what degree the public has engaged in knowledge or understanding of the bill, but I share concerns raised by Representative Hanna and Senator Verger.
Further discussion. Representative Galizia.
Just for clarity, wherever you stand on this bill, on the policy, shifting presumption does not take choice away. It's merely shifting presumption. You might not like that, but it's inaccurate to say that it takes away a choice.
Thank you. Representative Hanna.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. And respectfully to the good Dr. Bates, the testimony that was given by the Pacific Northwest Transplant Bank, the Donate Life Northwest Executive Director, and the iBank were all clearly against the policy. And if there's testimony outside of that that I'm not aware of, or that they did not clearly state yesterday, That should probably be vetted. But the testimony that was given yesterday was all clearly against that. And further, to the ambiguity around just asking for the donor piece at the DMV registration, again, for the medical professionals who are trying to make that decision in with an opportunity for the gift of life to someone else, this program does not enhance their ability to do that because the known organs still have to go through a family process where with the Donate Life process and registration via the website, those decisions have been made and are clear. Through just what we currently, if you have the donor card today, somebody's still got to ask the question, what is it you're going to donate for? Does it include research? Does it include eyes, tissue, bones, so forth? Using the website registration under the Donate Life piece, those questions are answered and actually then speed up the process for the potential of harvest. So, again, I want to be clear about the testimony that was given.
Thank you, Representative. Any further discussion? I'll comment just briefly, since I am one of the sponsors with Senator Bates, with the chair of the House Health Committee, with the chair of the House Human Services and Women's Wellness Committee, and the Senate chair of Health and the Senate chair of Human Services. Yesterday's work session and public hearing on this bill was intended to be a fiscal consideration and did not specifically seek out discussion on the policy. Some people who testified did address some concerns about the policy, but we did not have in the subcommittee yesterday that was looking at the fiscal the full benefit of the people who testified in the policy committee, which would have been, if the members had been able to see that, a much more balanced set of testimony. There was testimony from people representing recipients and families of people on waiting lists, people representing medical professionals who supported this bill. And I know we are all trying to get to the floor, so I will be fairly brief. We currently ask Oregonians who apply for a driver's license or an ID card whether they want to be an anatomical donor. We give them absolutely no information when we ask that question. This bill attempts to bridge that gap by starting to provide information to them about the program and deliberately expresses respect for individual choice in that decision. If anything, I think this bill is certainly an intention, and I think will have the result of giving people much more information when they're making that decision than they have now. We've already heard and considered other bills this session relating to anatomical donors, donations, and I've supported them. And I'm working with representatives of the different Oregon banks, as well as representatives of the groups who look out for the interests of patients and families of people who are on waiting lists. So I appreciate the significance and personal concerns that are raised here, but I do think that the subcommittee yesterday did not have access to all the information and perspective on this bill because it was intended to be a discussion of fiscal matters. With that, would you call the roll, please?
Senator Wesson?
Aye.
Senator Gordon?
Aye.
Senator Winters?
No.
Senator Johnson?
Aye.
Senator Bates?
Aye.
Senator Devlin?
Aye.
Senator Morse?
No.
Senator Berger?
Yes.
Senator Whitson?
No.
Vice Chair Carter?
Aye.
Co-Chair Schroeder?
No.
Yes.
Representative Morgan?
No.
Representative Hamm?
No.
Representative Jensen?
Aye.
Representative Garrard?
No.
Representative Galizian?
Aye.
Representative Shields?
Aye.
Representative Edwards?
Aye.
Vice Chair Nathanson?
Aye.
Co-Chair Nolan?
Yes.
Senator Nelson?
Aye.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Motion carries. House Bill 3244, relating to the Sustainability Board. Representative Garrard, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. House Bill 3244 creates an 11-member Sustainability Board within the Department of Administrative Services. The board is to develop and promote policies and programs that will assist in achieving sustainability goals that are set in statute. It may also accept donations and grants to carry out its work, and the bill establishes the Sustainability Board Fund for that purpose. If the board receives funds from outside sources, it may seek expenditure limitation from the emergency board or assembly as appropriate. The amendment to the bill essentially removes the fiscal impact by eliminating the requirement that DAS create an executive director position for the board. The amendment also removes some redundant rulemaking language and ensures that any interest earnings on the Sustainability Board Fund accrue to the general fund. Your Natural Resources Subcommittee recommends that House Bill 3244 be amended and reported out do pass as amended.
Thank you, Representative. Any discussion? Representative Morgan, please.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I think this is the third reincarnation of the Sustainability Board since about the 03 session. And I do believe that with the current iteration of the board and the duties that have been assigned to it, that there already are plenty of avenues in state government to have those kinds of discussions. There's boards and commissions that head up all of the state agencies that are charged with this. There are ample public processes that help us get to these kinds of ends. And I just really don't see the point of this, and I'll be a no vote on this.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Edwards, please.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I share Representative Morgan's concerns and will also be a no vote on this.
Further discussion? Objections? Representative Edwards, Representative Hannah, Representative Morgan, Senator Whitsitt, Senator Winters. Motion carries. Senate Bill 10, relating to government ethics. Senator Bates, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senate Bill 10 makes several changes to the state's government ethics laws and establishes a funding mechanism for the Government Standards and Practices Commission. The bill requires quarterly filings of expenditure statements by lobbyists and lobby entities and quarterly reporting of specified information by public officials and candidates. The bill also directs the Commission to develop an electronic filing and reporting system that is accessible to the public by January 1st, 2010. The funding mechanism included in the bill establishes an assessment-based system, removing the Commission from direct general fund appropriations. The assessment will be paid by all state agencies, local governments, local service districts, and special government bodies. State agencies will be assessed based on position count, and local government entities will be charged a fee based on the municipal audit filing fee structure. The proportional share of the budget will be determined by the Commission through rulemaking. The General Government Subcommittee recommends that Senate Bill 10A be amended reported out, do pass as amended.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Johnson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Out of an abundance of caution, I would like to declare a potential conflict of interest as I have a matter pending at GSPC.
Thank you, Senator. Any further discussion, Representative Hannah?
I also have a matter pending with the agency.
Okay.
Madam Chair, I was just curious in that Senator Bates made reference to Senate Bill 10A. Yet the committee has been given a summary measure on Senate Bill 10B.
Okay, I believe staff, is that just if we adopt the amendment?
Yes, that's okay.
Mr. Rocco, explain that. So,
Madam Chair, Representative Garrard, this is just a normal thing that we do where we post the current version of the bill and then we provide a summary that reflects the amendment that's being proposed for adoption.
Any objections? Oh, I'm sorry, further discussion. Representative Jensen.
I voted for this bill coming out of the subcommittee, and I will support it today. I do think there's a potential problem in this when we get to some of these small agency or small unpaid public servants that are out there, that we currently have some difficulty getting qualified people to serve on in school boards, cemetery districts, et cetera, et cetera, sort of thing. And I have preferred to have looked more in detail at this, but I will support the bill, and if it appears to be a problem in the future by anyone, anywhere, this body will be able to revisit the issue and make any corrections that are necessary.
Thank you, Representative. Further discussion? Senator Bates, please.
Madam Chair, I appreciate the good Chair Jensen's concerns. the fees for that would be paid by the governmental entity, but this is a sweeping bill. It's a lot of changes, and we all recognize that. We didn't get deeply into the policy in our subcommittee. We focused on the Ways and Means process. But it is statutory. If it has unintended consequences in the next 9 months, we're certainly going to see those when we come back in February. In addition, I believe this is probably going to go to the House floor and then to a Rules Committee there for further evaluation before we see it again. So I think we still have, so to speak, another bite of the apple here, and move this bill along if we could. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. Further discussion? Any objections? Seeing none, motion carries. Senate Bill 329, relating to the Oregon Health Fund Program. Senator Bates.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senate Bill 329 establishes a 7-member Oregon Health Fund Board to develop a comprehensive health care plan for consideration by the 2009 Legislative Assembly. The bill provides guidelines for consideration and plan development. It is nothing more, but it is a roadmap for ensuring that every Oregonian has health insurance and to control costs and produce better health outcomes for Oregonians. The A22 amendments before you reflect some changes to Senate Bill 329A that do the following. Changing the name of the board to the Oregon Health Fund Board in place of the board in the Department of Human Services instead of making it a separate agency. Removes the requirement that the board establish a toll-free number for persons missing information about available health care services. Changing the exclusionary language as to board membership so that the majority of members may not have earned more than 50% of the family income from health care industry in the past 2 years versus the indefinite period in the bill. Mm-hmm. Leaves board executive director a gubernatorial appointee, not an appointee of the board. Places language throughout this to support optimized federal fund match for program expenditures. Places the Office of Health Policy and Research in the Department of Human Services until January of 2010 and transfers its fundings to the Department of Human Services. Places the Oregon Prescription Drug Program in the Department of Human Services. Provides $1.2 million general fund and $671,000 federal funds expenditure limitation to DHS to implement the provisions of the bill. Provides the board with $1 other funds limitation as a placeholder in the event the board receives donations or grants to implement the bill. Your Human Services Subcommittee recommends that Senate Bill 329 be amended and poured out due pass as amended.
Thank you, Senator. Further, any discussion?
Senator Winters, I was a courtesy in sub, and I still have some concerns, and I know that because some debates know my concerns that it's missing a huge piece in that Senate Bill 27, and I don't know where the status of that is, but if we're going to set up a superstructure, we also need to have the dialogue on Medicaid, Medicare funding as proposed in 27. And in the absence of that, setting up the structure doesn't get us to where we need to be. So the good senator and I talked about this, and I don't want to be an impediment to the work that they've done, but that causes me great concern.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senate Bill 329 focuses on, to a great degree, on what we could do locally in the state to make sure every Oregonian is insured and to bring health care costs down. It does discuss the federal issues in Medicaid quite well. Medicare is an issue. We asked for a conversation on this. Senate Bill 27, in many ways, is a companion bill. And negotiations are still going on as of today and next week about how 27 and 329 will be tied together if it's all possible to do so. We believe that's quite likely. 27 has more of a focus on the federal issues of Medicare and deductibility in the insurance industry and for employers. And I still believe these two bills work well together. Many people have understood that these bills were married at one time, and now they're divorced, but they still have some children they have to take care of.
And we
plan to make sure those kids are taken care of very, very well. So I would ask that we move 329 forward, understanding that we are working very hard with 27, the Archimedes Movement, and Governor Kitzhaber to make sure that all these bills are successful. And we work together, and not in parallel, but work together and don't confront one another.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Gordley, please.
Thank you very much, Madam Co-Chair. I'm going to vote in favor of the measure, and I would just like to say that I take Senator Bates' comments as assurances about Senate Bill 27. Senate Bill 27 should be seen as a companion piece, absolutely. Another way of looking at it is as one of the bookends. It's a measure that absolutely must pass this session, and I'm going to count on your leadership and also that of Senator Westland to make sure that that happens. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Bates.
Madam Chair, for complete just for complete disclosure here, I'm not guaranteeing anything. We are working very hard to make 27 successful. We really, truly are. Can I guarantee that there's going to be enough votes on both floors for 27? I cannot. I'm hoping that will happen. I'm going to work very hard to make that happen. I'll give it my very best effort, and I'll try to make both these bills work together. I can honestly say that to you. And I was almost late for the meeting this morning because we were spending time with the ARC committees meeting this morning trying to work those issues out. They're offering amendments, which we'll be seeing on Monday or Tuesday, which I think may move us in that direction. But I can't absolutely guarantee it. I want to be very clear about that.
I accept that, and I respect the commitment behind your words. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Oh, Senator.
Just for clarification, it is not accurate to view these two bills as one being a state solution, the other being a federal solution. Both have very comprehensive federal subsections. The very narrow difference that we continue to work on, one applies for federal waivers to address the Medicare issue. Senate Bill 329 applies for federal legislation. That's how close we are. But please don't think of these two bills as often referred to as bookends. They are the library with a couple of pages that differ.
Thank you. Yes. Any objections?
Oh.
The House is already in session. We're about to be under a call, so I want to move the agenda, please.
Okay.
Any objections? Senator Whitsitt. Representative Hanna. Motion carries. Senate Bill 420. Senator Gordley, please.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Senate Bill 420 creates a 12-member Environmental Justice Task Force to be appointed by the governor and supported through the governor's office. The measure directs state agencies to report annually to the task force. State agencies will assist in the task force's work, including taking steps to ensure that those persons affected by natural resource agency decisions have a direct voice in those decisions. The duties of the Environmental Justice Task Force include submission of an annual report to the governor that identifies environmental justice concerns and the progress of state agencies toward achieving the goals established by the task force. During the past 15 years, limited duration advisory committees on environmental justice issues were created by Governor Barbara Roberts and Governor John Kitzhaber. The Department of Environmental Quality and Oregon Health Division have also examined these issues. Each natural resource agency is required to create a citizen advocate position on environmental justice issues. Natural resource agencies reported to LFO that they would accomplish this by designating existing staff as a citizen advocate. The governor's office would require a part-time position and funding for that position and task force meeting costs. The co-chair has agreed to deal with that in the review of the governor's office budget, and no funding is provided in this bill. Therefore, I'd like to thank Senator Devlin, Senator Schrader, Senator Avakian for ushering the bill to this place and this time. Thank you very much, Madam Co-Chair.
Thank you, Senator. Discussion. Senator Berger, please.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I appreciate whatever it is that is trying to be accomplished by this. I'm afraid that not being privilege to hear the policy discussion and simply being in ways and means. I'm confused by it, and I'm not sure that I can totally explain environmental justice to my district, who has a very strong environmental sensitivity, both pro and con. And so I'm going to show an objection today and hope to do better with information before the floor vote. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. Further discussion, Representative Morgan.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. In natural resource policy and within each of the natural resource agencies in the state of Oregon, there is already a very robust public input process. There are no permit processes in many of these agencies that don't already have public notification and public comment periods. And I think it's something that people that follow these issues are very used to using. It's very common in DEQ issues and land use issues and water resources issues and fish and wildlife issues for people to attend hearings and give public input. I don't believe that this bill will enhance that process. I think that the process, if there are people that feel like they're left out of the process, they should make the effort to be informed of the process that already exists and take part in it, because it is exhaustive. It often slows the process down from the point of view of the stakeholders in the process, which is not always a bad thing, because very often the public comment enriches the process. But to have set a picture in people's minds that there already isn't robust public input into natural resource issues is very erroneous. I'll be a no vote on this bill for many of the reasons that Senator Verger outlined, but I also feel that it simply is extraneous and adds another layer that isn't necessary to the process.
Thank you, Representative.
Senator Devlin, I will remind the committee again that the House is already on the floor, so please be attentive to that.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Quite honestly, I believe that there are public processes out there in many of these areas, but I don't believe that that entirely encompasses what the bill is trying to address. I think Senator Gordley could probably give a much clearer explanation in terms of environmental justice. I think some of the explanation we heard in committee was just basically equal treatment of people regardless of economic status, regardless of any other status in terms of demographics. I'd hate to cite this example, but the St. John's landfill was cited, I think, about 60 years ago in an area of Portland, which was a very poor, not poor area economically decided, but a very poor siting of a landfill, sited actually over two shallow lakes. The legacy of that landfill, even though tens of millions of dollars have been spent in closing it, in terms of the long-term impact on people who live in that area and the impact on the Columbia Slough, will be known for the next probably 100 years. And I think actually it was largely located there because it was out of sight and out of mind for most of Portland's residents, but not out of sight and out of mind for the people that lived in the area.
Thank you.
If I may add to the record, just for the clarity of the committee, Madam Co-Chair, the problem is environmental discrimination. Environmental discrimination has been defined as any policy or practice that generates environmental impacts for groups or communities that are identifiable by race, color, national origin, or economic background, and affecting rural and urban communities. This discrimination includes both the lesser enforcement of environmental standards and any practices that limit participation and decision-making by these groups or communities.
Thank you for that clarification, Senator.
She spoke to the exact issue I was concerned about better than I could have.
Okay, great. Senator Winters.
Thank you, Madam Kutcher, but I was just going to add to Senator that's a little older than I am.
No, she didn't say wiser.
No, she didn't. But if you knew about the St. John's landfill, And for those of you historically, that was where the area where Danport fled, and where individuals like myself resided. And so when we talk about environmental injustice, those of us who grew up in Portland and other areas were quite familiar how we don't get information and how we are slighted in things going through. So thank you, Elder.
Okay, cleanup. Vice Chair Carter.
Well, Madam Chair, I have just last month, I have a large an article that was done by National Organizations, National Environmental Community, that spoke to the issue of environmental injustice. And right in Portland, Oregon today, we, the legislature, helped to give money to OHSU as well as national dollars to help them deal with people with asthma. Disproportionately, minority communities are faced with that issue. We just got the Department of Transportation to put up barriers in North Northeast Portland because the pollution from cars and trucks were so bad, and so many of our children have asthma. It's unbelievable. So I want all of you to know that environmental injustice is truly an issue, and know that there is not an arena in this state whereby those issues are being heard, let alone being addressed. So I want you to know it is a reality, and I would encourage all of you to support this bill so we can deal with this issue. Because guess what, folks? When you start talking about the health plan and other issues, you're paying for it in emergency rooms through little kids coming with asthma and adults who have an increase of asthma in the state of Oregon. And it's not just among low-income minority communities. It is among all the general population.
Thank you. Any objections? Representative Garrard, Representative Hanna, Representative Morgan, Senator Whitsitt, Senator Verger, Senator Nelson. Motion carries. Senate Bill 958, relating to in-home care agencies. Senator Johnson, please.
Senate Bill 958A expands the Department of Human Services regulation of in-home care agencies by requiring the department to conduct an on-site inspection of each in-home care agency prior to issuing a license, and once every 3 years thereafter. Failure to comply with licensing requirements includes, but is not limited to, failure on the part of the in-home care agency to provide a written disclosure statement to the client or client's representative prior to the in-home care services being rendered, failure to provide the contracted in-home care services, or failure to correct deficiencies identified during a departmental inspection. The bill eliminates DHS authority to establish fees for the in-home care agency licensing program and rule. Instead, the measure establishes licensing fees in statute. Senate Bill 958 is expected to generate about $88,000 of additional revenue during the 07-09 biennium. This additional revenue will be used to fund one part-time client care surveyor position that will conduct the inspections this measure requires. The Human Services Subcommittee recommends Senate Bill 958A be reported out to pass.
Thank you, Senator. Any discussion? Any objections? Seeing none, motion carries. A few more quick items, and I appreciate your hanging in there with us, colleagues. Other business, Department of Human Services, federal grant application, Senator Carter, please.
Here, the Department of Human Services is seeking approval to apply to the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services Administration for Children and Families for services to order a refugee grant. The grant would be for up to $150,000 a year, may be renewed for up to $750,000 over 5 years. The grant application is due June 18th. It requires no state matching funds, but of course, state staff. DHS would use the grant funds to contract with providers to serve refugees aged 16 or older in Multnomah, Washington, and Clackamas counties. The grant would be focused on services that support older refugees in becoming naturalized citizens, such as specialized classes, individual coaching, and help with acquired paperwork. It will also help improve access to existing social services in the community through outreach and case management activities. The agency has had several or similar federal grants to this population, but these will expire this year. The Human Services Subcommittee recommends approval of the request.
Thank you, Senator. Any discussion? Any objections? Seeing none, motion carries. Department of Transportation, federal grant application. Senator Virgil, please.
The Transportation and Economic Development Subcommittee recommends approving the submission of a federal grant application by the Oregon Department of Transportation. The purpose of this grant is to repair, rehabilitate, or preserve covered bridges that are eligible for listing or currently listed on the National Register of Historic Places. The Federal Highway Administration National Historic Covered Bridge Preservation Program is part of the Safe, Accountable, Flexible, Efficient Transportation Equity Act, a legacy for use of 2005 Safety Lou, Section 1804. There is no requirement for safe matching funds. However, the owners of the bridges are required to provide approximately 11.5% in matching funds. Oregon Department of Transportation has received grant requests from Benton, Douglas, Jackson, Lane, Lynn, Marion, and Lincoln counties, and the cities of Drain, Myrtle Creek, Cottage Grove, and Sweet Home to make repairs to 16 bridges.
Thank you, Senator. Any discussion? Any objections? Seeing none, motion carries. Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board, application for four federal grants. Senator Devlin, please.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. The subcommittee recommends approving the submission of four federal grant applications to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service totaling $2,217,935 for two grants for purchase of coastal wetlands and two grants for restoration of coastal wetlands. The Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board is seeking approval to apply to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service National Coastal Wetlands Conservation Grant Program for the four grants. All grants from this program must be submitted by state agencies. Mm-hmm. Two of the grants are for acquisition of wetlands in Yaquina Bay. The other two grants are for restoration of wetlands in Lincoln County. All grant applications must be received by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service by June 29, 2007. All grants require a 25% match. Your Natural Resources Subcommittee recommends approval of the grant request.
Thank you, Senator. Any discussion? Any objections? Seeing none, motion carries. Colleagues, we are indeed closing in on completing our work for this session, but that means that we still have a sprint to the finish. You have all noticed that we have posted subcommittee meetings, hearings, and work sessions for this afternoon and for tomorrow. We hope, with your help, that tomorrow will be the only weekend day that the subcommittees need to work before the end of session. But I would greatly appreciate it. The co-chair and I would both appreciate it if you can participate truly in both the afternoon sessions this afternoon and tomorrow. Given the slug of bills that we are still working through here, I think you should also expect that we will probably have a full committee meeting sometime in the middle of next week, so please be mindful of postings for that. We will notify you when that gets scheduled.
Just a Madam Co-Chair, Robin, you want to make the times for this afternoon?
That's a good idea. Do you know them? Okay.
Well, thank you.
Down the hallway here, it's listed on the internet.
We'll remind people, and they are posted. I believe we'll have subcommittees at 1 o'clock, 2:30, and starting at 4 to 5. I believe general government is at 4 to 5.
Yes. It's here for anyone who wants to take a look at it.
Tomorrow
if you don't have it.
The morning.
Tomorrow it's like 9 o'clock and then...
9 to 10:30, will meet, and then two subs will meet from 1 to 2:30.
Great. Thank you all.
Just a question. Is coaching's really done?
I think that would be a yes. And we are looking for an opportunity for us to celebrate our collective successes on Tuesday evening, the 26th. I hope you have all received that invitation as well. We are adjourned.
Okay.